Maboff!
This is Scammapalooza. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And if you do enjoy the show, why not leave a review or subscribe on iTunes? I have it on good authority that when society eventually crumbles into dust, the only evidence that you ever set foot on this planet will be the 5-star review that you gave this podcast. When I was a little kid, my sister and I believed in fairies. Why wouldn't we? We had proof. The sprites left fairy circles, round patches on the back lawn where the magic had killed the grass, leaving a perfect round ring. We'd spend hours out there setting up little teacups filled with honey and bordering the rings with daisy chains and rose petals. It was a full decade later before I realised that they weren't really fairy circles at all, but the dead patches caused by the ageing family dog's weak nitrogen-filled bladder. In the 1910s, a pair of British schoolgirls were also convinced that their garden was filled with mystical creatures. But unlike my sister and I, they took pictures of their fairies, setting off a chain of events that stretched across the 20th century, involving the Theosophical Society, James Randi, the Kodak Company, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. On today's show, pop culture podcaster Sarah Baggs uncovers the truth behind the Cottingley fairies, and we find out whether they were the real deal or just a pile of piss. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. I'm joined today by Sarah Bagg, who is a podcaster, jack of all trades in the area of pop culture. You have 3 podcasts that you're on?
Yep, 3 at the moment.
At the moment?
Yeah, well, who knows what could happen.
But the reason why you're here today is to talk about, I'm going to call this pop culture because I, at the time of the events that we're going to discuss, it was very much popular culture and it also draws from historical figures who themselves are pop culture icons.
Absolutely. Everyone was talking about it, mm-hmm. and they had the backing of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I can't say his name without saying Sir. Yeah, who obviously wrote all the Sherlock Holmes books. So he was very, very popular, very in the public eye at that time. So it was a huge deal.
And Harry Houdini, he had a look in?
He had nothing to do with it. He was in the movie.
Really?
I've read extensively about the Cottingley fairies and there is nothing about Houdini at all. Unless someone's made a glaring omission in all the writings.
So if even Harry Houdini's going to put up his hands and back away slowly, then this is something weird.
Yeah, I guess so.
So we should explain then. So the Cottingley Fairy story is essentially 2 young girls who proved for a brief time the existence of fairies.
There were 2 girls, Frances Griffiths and Elsie Wright. Frances had just moved over from South Africa and her dad was in the war, World War I. The war.
Yeah, the fact you said the war made me realize.
I'm an old soul. Yeah, so her father was fighting in World War I, so her mum and Frances moved over from South Africa, were living with their cousins, the Wright. Yeah, Frances was just getting in trouble constantly coming home from the little stream behind their house, always wet and muddy and filthy, and she would justify this by saying that she'd been playing with fairies.
And how old was she at this point?
When they first took the first photo that they ended up taking of the fairies, she was 9 and the older girl, Elsie, was 16.
This is something where the imagination has come from the younger child.
Well, I from all accounts, Elsie, the older one, she was always very imaginative, always very off with the fairies. I think it was a bit of both, honestly, but I think being younger in Frances's case definitely helped it.
It is that thing you do as a child, which is just to blame anything on a supernatural being, on your imaginary friend.
Definitely, I'm guilty of that myself.
Of blaming things on fairies?
No. When I was a kid, I had an imaginary friend called Fred. He had a very colourful life. My mum told me in the end he went to war and died is what I told her. So
God.
Fred met a grisly end.
You had fairies in your childhood.
I did. I grew up in Bairnsdale out in Gippsland and we used to go to Buchan a lot, which is famous for some natural underground caves. My parents took me and my brother there and one of the caves is called the Fairy Caves because it's very small. And afterwards, my dad said, well, who saw fairies? I'll give lollies to anyone who saw fairies. And my brother was like, oh, yeah, I did. And so I said, I did too. And my parents were like, you're just saying that because Jeremy said that. And I turned around and said, there's no such thing as fairies. And then my parents made a massive deal about saying that I just killed a fairy, which really upset me and sort of pushed me into writing letters to the fairies to apologize for killing one of them.
And then Fred was sent off into the fairy wars.
Yeah, that's right.
He was conscripted.
He was sent on a diplomatic mission of peace and ended up getting caught in the middle of a war.
And this is, I mean, this is the same thing that happened to the girls, was that they probably knew, definitely the older girl knew that there was no such thing as fairies.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. One of the books that I read, I don't have the name of it in front of me, sorry, but it's sort of a dramatization of the story. It's written out like a novel. Frances saw fairies, is what it says. Like, she believed in fairies. She believed that fairies existed, but these photos, they were desperate to prove it to people that the fairies existed, but the fairies that they saw couldn't be enticed onto film. So Frances, at least, believed in them for her whole life. There is a bit of a... Because out of the five photos that were taken, there was a lot of disagreement between the two girls or women in the end about the authenticity of the final fifth photo, because Frances thought that was real until her dying day and asserted that that was genuine.
This is where the story changes, and this is where the story is different from your childhood fairies.
Yes.
In that rather than coming to the conclusion that there's no such thing as fairies, these girls decided that they were going to prove the existence of fairies by capturing them on film, and they came up with five separate photographs of what they claimed were fairies. How did they end up taking those photographs?
The girls saying that there were fairies down the stream became sort of a family joke, and they were always getting teased, and it just got to a point where the girls were very frustrated about being the butt of the family joke that they were going to see these fairies. So Elsie's dad had a camera. He was an amateur photographer back in those days, and they sort of just pushed him around, nagged him to death until he agreed to give them one plate, because that's how photos were taken in those days, on glass plates. Half an hour later, came back with the first photo, which is arguably the most famous of all the pictures, which is of Frances sitting behind a rock, four fairies dancing in front of her. And the dad sort of was developing this photo, and Elsie was in the dark room with him, and Frances was waiting outside. And as he sees these figures in the foreground of this photo coming through, he thought that they were scraps of rubbish from a picnic. He's like, well, you might have cleaned up before you took this photo. And then the fairies started just revealing themselves, and Elsie was freaking out, and she's saying, they're on the plate, they showed up. And Frances was outside the dark room jumping for joy, being like, yeah.
And so did the father, did their dad believe them straight away?
No, he was very skeptical. From all accounts, he was the smartest man in the family. He was very intellectual type, well-respected in the area. He was a mechanic. He had a sound understanding of science, and he demanded to know, like, what the trick was, and the girls would not admit to any trick.
Having a dad who believes strongly in science and who straight away is essentially accusing them of trickery, do you think that made them double down, that made them more insistent on showing that these were real?
Yeah, I think to girls that age, you know, seeing is believing, and the fact that the dad could see this, you know, photographic evidence and still not believe would be very frustrating. It would definitely make me want to dig my heels in.
I remember all of the things that I wanted to do. I wanted as a kid, as soon as my parents said no, I would... Then that was the thing that I wanted
absolutely.
Most in the world.
Maybe his skepticism in part was one of the reasons that they ended up taking a second photo, which is what they did just 3 months after that. This time it was a gnome, which is also a very famous photograph. I think it was used as the cover for the book that Arthur Conan Doyle subsequently wrote. And it has Elsie sitting on the grass, sort of reaching out, beckoning to this gnome. He's about 30 centimetres tall, like quite big, and he sort of looks like he's about to hop up onto her lap, and he's quite ugly. He's not as pretty as...
And he has moth wings, doesn't he, whereas the other fairies had more butterfly-type wings?
Yeah, his wings do look decidedly more moth-like, but one of the markings that looks quite moth-like is actually a set of panpipes that the guy's just sort of holding over his... To me, when you look at the photos, it's decidedly more mothy, in my opinion.
And moth related.
Sort of a more masculine tone.
It does. It reminds me a lot of, I mean, we have like this strong skeptic community. Mm. And I'm sure there are lots of skeptics who listen to the podcast, who go out and they argue against people who believe in fairies or who believe in psychic powers or pyramids or crystals or anything like that. And I wonder whether sometimes they are doing more harm than good in by being argumentative, because it just like in the same way as kids double down. I'm sure adults do the same as well.
I don't know. I guess it depends on the person. One of the things I found quite striking about Arthur Conan Doyle, in the book that he wrote about this, eventually, the coming of the fairies, he presents every argument that people have against the fairies, he's published in the book. He said, this guy said this, and these were his disputes, and these are the issues that these people took with it. And he has a reply for everything. I mean, and you'd want to if you're going to say that fairies are real, but I don't know, the sort of disputes that people had seemed to strengthen his resolve.
One of my favourite scams is Victor Lustig, who's the man who sold the Eiffel Tower, mm-hmm. and he succeeded in selling the Eiffel Tower. And as history goes on, that story becomes more and more incredible, because the Eiffel Tower becomes more and more a permanent icon,
yes.
and the idea of selling it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whereas at the time of the scam, it had been created as a temporary structure for a fair,
mm-hmm.
and wasn't meant to be there forever.
Yeah.
So the idea of selling it was much more believable. Do you think that at the time, the idea of believing in fairies was a more reasonable prospect?
Absolutely. There seems to be, and it's a sign of the times, I guess, but a very divisive attitude about the fairies, where the sort of city folk, the people who are living in London and those sort of areas, definitely didn't think that fairies were a thing. But they said that the people who lived in Yorkshire where this happened, adults asserted for their whole lives that fairies were absolutely real, and they'd seen them on the moors and they'd seen them on the farms. And I think it wasn't that bad to deal with fairies. I think maybe around the time that this was happening and people were becoming more scientifically minded, it started to become less popular, but I think it was part of life.
So how did the photos get? Because at the moment, the photos are in the family.
Mm-hmm.
They're it's really the kids and their dad and the family. How did they get out into the world?
The mum used to sort of trot them out for friends a lot. They were a bit of a curiosity. They thought they were funny. And then in the end, she ended up going to a meeting for theophysists. It's very hard for me to say. Theophysists. So, yeah, people.
Sorry, what a meeting of?
Theosophists.
Oh, okay.
A meeting of people who did believe in, you know, the sort of spiritual realms. Took it, showed it to the speaker at this meeting, and it ended up falling into the hands of Edward Gardner. He started writing to the mum of the family, her name was Polly Wright, and being like, can I have a look at these negatives? Can I examine them? Because he sort of thought that this evidence that fairies existed would be a boon for the Theosophical Society's mission to sort of enlighten people about the existence of otherworldly creatures.
Gardner was wired to believe in the fairies.
Absolutely.
Whereas the dad was like, nah.
It looks like Gardner did his due diligence. He took the photos to an expert in photographic forgery called Mr. Snelling. The thing that I love about the book that Arthur Conan Doyle wrote is that they put the addresses of every single person involved. So they'd be like, Mr. Snelling of Harrow, but not just where they were from, but also the street address. So you could track all these people down, you know, if you wanted to. Pretty much just gave him the negatives and didn't say anything about it. And so just look at these, tell me what you think. And this guy was like, oh, this is remarkable. This is a single exposure. Doesn't look like any sort of trickery to me. And look at these figures, you know, they're moving. They were moving when this photo was taken. And I think that sort of crystallized in Mr. Gardner's mind that these had to be real.
He didn't say that the photos were real, though, did he? He just said he couldn't see any evidence of forgery.
That's right. I actually have a quote here somewhere. The two negatives are entirely genuine, unfaked photographs with no trace whatsoever of studio work involving card or paper models. So that's what he said. He refused to speculate on the existence of fairies,
mm-hmm.
but as far as he could see, there wasn't any tricks at work.
So his argument was that these are real photos, not that these are real photos
of fairies,
which
exactly.
is a different thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's something that comes up a lot, because by the time Sir Arthur Conan Doyle got hold of these photos, he wanted further experts to be reviewing these. So they took them to Kodak, and Kodak sort of said, well, they look real to us. Like, we can't see any forgery, but that doesn't mean that a skilled person couldn't fake these. So their answer was a bit wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And the other company was called Ilford. And they unequivocally said there is some evidence of faking. Arthur Conan Doyle sort of took it as a two against one. Two out of three people that we asked said that the photos are real.
Again, you say there that Gardner did do due diligence, but it doesn't really sound like he did. I mean, it sounds like he did the legwork, but it was very much looking for someone to agree with and then just ignore the evidence that didn't support what he wanted to believe.
Like, yes, definitely. But I mean, I think in his mind, I think he was satisfied that he did enough. Whether, you know, from a scientific standpoint, you know, they checked it enough. No.
So Gardner's now convinced that the photos are real. How many photos are there at this point?
Two.
There's just still two, right?
Still just the two. So basically he was shopping these around. They had the negatives enlarged. They had prints made. They were showing them off. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle eventually got wind of it.
He, at this point, is a celebrity. Like, his books are famous. He's well known around the world. And he's known not just for the books, for the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, but also as a lover of the occult.
Yes.
That's what he's remembered as historically, but that was true at the time.
Something that doesn't come up a lot, Arthur Conan Doyle's dad was in a mental institution.
I thought you were going to say his dad was a fairy.
No, but his dad saw fairies. So he was in a mental asylum for most of Arthur Conan Doyle's life, I think, and he used to draw these portraits of fairies and pictures of what he'd seen and that sort of thing. And I think, and he'd also lost his son in the war. So I think things like the occult and seances and the existence of fairies, it was largely about him, you know, trying to get some sort of peace of mind about his situation. Like, if fairies were real, then his dad's not crazy, you know, and if he's able to have a seance and speak to his dead son, then, you know, he has a bit of peace of mind.
So Conan Doyle gets his hands on the photographs. He starts shopping them around himself to check that they're real, and he reaches the conclusion himself that they're real photographs?
Yeah, absolutely. So he went to Kodak, he went to Ilford, and they already had the testimony of Harold Snelling. He was pretty much convinced that they were real. He actually, coincidentally, around the time that he became aware of these photos, because the first one was taken in 1917, and he became aware of these photos in 1920, and it was a bit of a godsend, because he was supposed to be writing an article for a Christmas edition of The Strand about fairies, and he found out about it. He's like, well, this is great, you know, I can put these photos in my article. Couldn't have come at a better time as far as he was concerned.
And so he wrote the article for The Strand, and is that when the world really found out about them?
Yeah, this is how the world came to know about these fairies. Everyone was crazy about it, and obviously that sparked a lot of backlash as well. You know, a lot of people saying, well, this is obviously fake, people doing their own investigations into
but they couldn't, because he had kept their names by keeping their names private, you know, and out
it's
of
a
the
bit,
paper.
Yeah,
he
it's
becomes
a bit
the gatekeeper
sus.
of the girls and the negatives and the information.
Absolutely. But one persistent reporter, he actually found. So again, with the giving out of addresses is crazy to me. So he kind of went to Yorkshire, asked around, showed people photos, and yeah, eventually, you know, was starting to see people like, oh, I know this girl, this is Elsie Wright, this is Frances Griffiths, and led him directly to their home. And he wrote an article and said, yes, I discovered the real identity. It's these girls, and they live at such and such address, and just published that in the paper. And it's like, well, thanks a lot, dude.
Yeah, but reporters like to do that, though. I mean, like, uncover the real story behind it. And if you look at the history of journalistic hoaxes throughout the ages, there is always that thing of the reporter or the writer saying, no, I'm trying to protect my sources. Yeah. And it turns out that the sources don't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. Just,
that tends to be the pattern. So you understand the idea of the reporter trying to find the real people, but kind of a dick move.
Yeah, well, one of the defences that he uses in his article is that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle withholding the girls' names made people from Yorkshire suspicious. And he said, you know, if Sir Arthur Conan Doyle knew anything about people from Yorkshire and didn't spend all his time in London, then maybe he'd know that this isn't how Yorkshire people want to be treated. They're not going to believe it if you don't give names and facts. He sort of says in his article, look, I went there, I asked around, and I couldn't prove it one way or the other myself. I spoke to the mum, I spoke to the dad, I spoke to Elsie, Because by that stage, Frances and her mum had moved. And, yeah, they all gave the exact same version of the events. So the guy was like, well, look, no one, there was no variation in the story whatsoever. I can't find anything to prove that it's fake. And I can't find anything to prove that it's real.
And that's though, a really powerful thing to do, because then you're providing evidence. And if you don't reach a conclusion, then that allows people to read and analyze that evidence that you provide in any way that you like. So
absolutely.
If you already believe, that's just going to, that's going to make things stronger for you.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a lot of people who thought that it was a hoax? Because this is at the time, I mean, by now, this is 70, 80 years after the great Sun Moon hoax, which, do you know about the Sun?
No.
The Sun newspaper, basically, the short version is that the Sun newspaper, trying to increase their circulation, printed a whole bunch of fake stories claiming that a new telescope had been discovered that could see the surface of the moon.
Oh.
And each day would, and each week would publish new reports of what had been seen. And there were like bat people flying around and weird balls rolling across the countryside and enormous abandoned temples. And then other newspapers started to go, oh yes, yes, we've read the same reports. And they would just copy what was
goodness.
In the sun. And so people, Edgar Allan Poe used to write these hoaxes, and Benjamin Franklin as well. So these newspaper hoaxes were clearly like a popular thing.
Yeah.
This is like many, many years later. So were there people who just went, not just, oh, this is fake, but this is clearly a journalistic hoax. It's a practical joke. It's a prank. We're not buying it.
Well, not so much a prank, but there was the main article that I read that stood out to me was from a guy called, he was a poet and a novelist. His name was Maurice Hewlett. And his main argument was that there is a difference between a photo of something in motion and a drawing of something in motion, and talking about how the photo looks like a painting of something that's moving, like you might have a painting of a horse running,
mm-hmm.
and that when you take a photo of something that's in motion, it is decidedly different. Thing. And also he said that I know children would not be staring straight down the barrel of a camera when there's fairies dancing in front of their faces, because in the first photo that they took, Frances is just looking at the camera while these fairies are dancing around her, and she's just like, whatever.
Yeah, she looks like she's posing for a portrait.
Exactly.
It doesn't look like she's even aware of the fairies.
Yeah, exactly right. The other critique that came up later on after more photos had been taken was that their hairstyles were too fashionable to be fairies. Arthur Conan Doyle, he responded, and Mr. Gardner responded as well to these allegations and said, you know, fairies aren't the same as human beings. Who's to say that a fairy in motion doesn't look like that when it's photographed?
That's brilliant. The idea that fairies are magic, therefore all of the flaws
and
arguments against it can be explained by magic. It's the same as people who use the Bible to prove that God exists.
Yes.
Because it's the word of God.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, if you believe, you can sort of explain it any way you want. So they said, you know, fairies are different. You know, they may not have the same sort of skeletal systems that humans have. The reason that she's staring at the camera is because cameras are still very novel to her. She was very occupied with making sure it was a good photo and looking at the camera, and that also they were just so used to seeing fairies that at this point they're a bit passé. And, you know, why would you look at fairies when you're so used to seeing them? There was something else that I read that they believed that the reason that the girls could see these fairies and capture them while other people couldn't was that these girls were special and that they had a special sort of ectoplasm and aura that allowed the fairies to become solid and be able to be captured by these things. So one of the defenses was like, well, you can't see the fairies because you're not special.
But also it makes perfect sense within the logic of fairies exist.
Absolutely.
Like anything's possible. So we've now got the later photographs, and in some of the later photos, you do get to see the girls looking directly at the fairies.
Oh, well, not always directly, because direct eye contact with the fairies disconcerts them.
Ah,
which
right.
is one of the defenses for why in one of the photos the girl isn't looking directly at the fairy.
Well, they're looking closer to
they like,
appear to be interacting more.
Exactly. So around this time, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was very keen on the fairies, but he had a tour in Australia. So he had to, I was going to say fly over here, but he didn't.
No, he had some fairies that just picked him up and carried him across.
Yeah, so he was in Australia on tour and he sent Edward Gardner off to sort of liaise with this family, give them new cameras. He gave the girls a camera each and secretly marked plates so that they couldn't be swapped around or fiddled with, which is good. I guess that's scientifically responsible of them. Didn't tell the girls that they were marked, obviously. And they ended up taking two more pictures. So they took Francis and the Leaping Fairy. Yeah, fairy sort of sitting on a branch with its leg kicked out and its arms outspread, leaping towards her, which was nice. And they took fairy offering Posy to Elsie, which is one of the ones that really came under fire for the fairy being too fashionable.
I'm looking at the fairy right now and she's... I'll put these up on the website.
Yes,
at conman.com.au. And she does... Yeah, the fairy looks particularly hip. It's, yeah. She's got a real Phryne Fisher vibe about her that's very...
Well, I don't know...
early 20th century.
Not to be a contrarian, but, you know, I don't see why a fairy should have to get around in rag. Fairies could be fashion forward.
You're too cool to be a fairy.
Exactly right. And then the other photo that they took, it's called the Fairies and Their Sunbath, which is the disputed fifth photo, where the girls were sort of mooching around and sort of ended up taking a photo of nothing. And this one is sort of funny to me because one of the girls, I don't remember which, said that when the photo was first developed, they didn't really see anything in it. And then when they looked at it at another time later, possibly when someone had a chance to muck around with the negatives or something, they could see the outlines of fairies in it.
Well, this is the one that people still to this day claim could be real.
Well, this is the one that Frances just asserted was 1,000,000% real till the day she died.
Yeah, and it's also the one that is the least clear and the most ambiguous and for that reason the hardest to dispute as a fake. It very much could just, even if it's not faked or altered in some way, it clearly borders on pareidolia. It looks like an optical illusion, like it looks like they've seen fairies in clouds or the Virgin Mary in a toasted cheese sandwich.
Exactly right. The girls sort of said that they didn't know what this photo was of, but of course experts in the field of fairies were like, oh, well, you know, experts know that this is what's called a magnetic bath that fairies weave. It's like sort of like a cocoon or a hammock or something that they shelter in after bad weather. So, the girls had no idea what it was. Other people who really wanted to believe in the fairies were quick to jump on it and say what it definitely was.
And so now this is the height of fairy mania. Conan Doyle's book is out by now?
Well, that book didn't come out till 1922.
Oh, right. And this is sort of more towards the end of people caring about
it. Yeah, exactly right. And the girls were definitely over it by this stage.
Well, they would have grown. I mean, Elsie in particular, she would have been an adult by the time this is all...
Exactly. They were just getting hounded by the press a lot. From all accounts, Francis got a lot of... She got teased a lot at school. But yeah, he put out this book with all the sides of the story, but continues to assert through the whole thing that fairies are real and these are the reasons. And they decided to get clairvoyant out with the girls.
This is Geoffrey Hodson.
Geoffrey Hodson. That was in 1921, just before the book was published. And they sort of took him down and he starts running around going, oh, yes, I see them. And I see this fairy over here and I see this fairy over there. When you read what he wrote about the fairies, it seems like he's got a bit of a fairy fetish, this guy.
So this is fairy / fiction.
He perceived a woman all in gold, shimmery aura, but not really wearing any clothes, hovering in front of his face, and she touched her hands to her lips. And so he was seeing
can
these...
Can I get a copy?
So the girls pretty much played along and like, oh yes, we see them too for sure. But then afterwards they were like, that guy was straight up a fraud and we just sort of indulged him for our own amusement. But that guy, what a weirdo. He really just wanted to see some sexy fairies.
So after the book's published and the girls grow up, does it just sort of die away?
Yeah, the girls got married. I think it was Elsie moved to Africa, raised her family there, lived there for a very long time. They just lived their lives and definitely made went to a lot of effort of keeping this hidden, didn't tell their kids about it, got dredged up a couple of times over the years. In the 60s, some journos went after them and they still said, yes, it was real, we don't really want to talk about it. In the 70s, again, they were interviewed and really attacked. They still stuck to their guns. In 1978, a guy called James Randi noticed the resemblance between the dancing fairies in the first one and a book that was published in 1915, just 2 years before the first photo was taken.
And sorry, you say a guy called James Randi. Like, James Randi is the king of skeptical thinking,
yes,
and critical thought in the modern age.
Yes.
And
he has exposed
some of the greatest supernatural and paranormal frauds and hoaxes in the world. So
yeah,
he's not just a guy.
No, he's not just a guy. I should give him his due. Yeah. So he noticed the similarities between these drawings and Princess Mary's Gift Book, which is a book that the girls had that time that was quite popular. Finally, in 1983, Joe Cooper for the magazine The Unexplained interviewed them, and they finally sort of confessed that, yes, Elsie drew or painted these fairies. They stuck them up with hat pins and gum and sort of like stuck the hat pins into the ground to make them stick up. And when they were done taking the photos, they pushed the hat pins into the ground and tear the drawings of the fairies up and throw them into the beck so that they'd be, you know, properly destroyed before they went back. And like I said, Francis refused to acknowledge that the fifth photo was anything but real.
The thing that strikes me about it, it's that moment where Gardner goes to that first photographic expert and says, what do you think? And they come back and say, it's not a fake photograph, but like if it is fake, it's an extraordinary amount of talent and ability and skill has gone, mm-hmm, into making this fake photograph.
Yeah.
And his response is not to say this young woman, this 16-year-old girl, might have extraordinary ability, but is to go, well, it must be fairies.
Yeah.
The idea for him, the idea of believing that Elsie could be a talented artist and photographer is so unlikely that it must be magic.
Actually, this is something that does come up, and actually something that really basically hurt Elsie's feelings a lot. I'll read you this quote from the book. It said, there is one point of Mr. Gardner's investigation which should be mentioned. It had come to our knowledge that Iris could draw and had actually at one time done some designs for a jeweller. This naturally demanded caution, though the girl's own frank nature is, I understand, a sufficient guarantee for those who know her. Mr. Gardner, however, tested her powers of drawing and found that while she could do landscapes cleverly, the fairy figures which she had attempted in imitation of those that she'd seen were entirely uninspired and bore no possible resemblance to those in the photographs. You know, she said in her autobiography that really, really hurt her feelings,
yeah,
that they thought, you know, that she wasn't good enough.
Because the original drawings, the ones which are in that book, are... they're line drawings. They're cartoony. They're line on paper.
Yeah, they're line drawings. But these ones have life.
Yeah.
They have like personality, and the wings aren't in the original picture. She added those wings. You know, it's
yeah. They're dancing girls. Are the originals.
And yeah.
The ones that she did have got depth. They've got shading. They've got character and personality. And
yeah,
then the fact that the composition, despite that first one looking a little bit staged, where they're looking, the composition of the rest of them are pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's forced perspective is why the eyes don't quite match up. That's
yeah,
a difficult thing to get. But the fairies really do look like they're there and,
yeah,
and interacting.
Absolutely. Real shame that what could have been a great career in art for her was sort of dismissed because she wasn't good enough. And this is a girl who her whole life had been told that she wasn't really smart enough. She dropped out of school at the earliest possible age, and her parents freely acknowledged that she was a bit of an idiot. Her dad said at one point, because he admired Sir Arthur Conan Doyle a lot and was sort of disappointed that this man who was his hero was fooled by his daughter and said, and her at the bottom of her class, you know, has managed to fool this guy, which just really sucks. I guess it's a sign of the times that people speak so frankly about their children's intellectual abilities. You wouldn't think that parents would do that a lot now.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Look at this dumb baby.
Look at this dumb baby. So since then, the story has come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
They've been revealed to be a hoax. We know with the exception of that fifth photo, that there is still people claiming that it's real. Mm-hmm. We know the whole story. That means that now it can enter into popular culture.
Yes.
And we have the 1995 movie?
Seven.
1997 movie that tries to bring the story to life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it implies that the fairies are real.
Oh, it does not imply anything. It's straight up fairies are 1,000,000% real.
Yeah.
Again, it's a bit of a dishonor to Elsie's memory. In this story, basically, her family are recovering from the death of Elsie's brother, who, as far as I know, does not really exist. And he was the one with the artistic ability, and he was the one who was able to draw fairies. So again, Elsie doesn't get to have artistic talent in this story.
Even in the movie.
Yeah. There is like one throwaway thing where they said, oh, yeah, she's pretty artistic, but never. Like, they're like, oh, look at what Joseph used to draw. Elsie's mother is grief-stricken by the death of her child and ends up going to this theosophical meeting because she's searching for some peace of mind about the death of her son. And that's how she sort of gets to know Edward Gardner personally, played by Bill Nighy. And then he ends up taking the photos to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and then Harry Houdini gets thrown into the
yes,
mix.
Harvey Keitel is Harry Houdini.
Yeah, and as I was saying to you when we were first talking about this, that's why I have a bit of a crush on Harvey Keitel, because I watched this movie in my formative years.
Do you know there is a miniseries coming out called Houdini and Doyle
about
the two of them? And from what I can tell, it's essentially the X-Files set in Victorian England.
That sounds amazing. I would watch the crap out of that.
So them going around solving paranormal. This is what I've heard. Them solving paranormal mysteries with Conan Doyle is Fox Mulder, and
he wants to believe.
Yeah, exactly. And Houdini,
man.
Isn't it brilliant? I'm totally going to watch.
We should have a watching party. That sounds great.
If it is all it's that I've been promised, then we will be watching.
That's
the
awesome.
Hell out of it.
So were they friends in real life?
Yeah, they were. No,
well,
they were friends,
I guess,
and they
that's,
did. They had a lot of correspondence. You can read some of their correspondence online.
Well, look, to be honest, to be perfectly candid, I did not finish The Coming of the Fairies. So maybe Houdini comes up in it towards the end. But in all my other readings, Houdini had nothing to do with it. So maybe he was just put in the movie because they did have a real life relationship, but not really to do with the Cottingley fairies.
That aside from the father, the story lacks a credible skeptic.
It lacks
someone to come in and be the Scully and the voice of reason and to
say,
no, let's, and Houdini plays that role well.
Well, in the movie, the dad is a skeptic the whole way through. It's only till 2 minutes before the end where the mum and dad see a fairy fly past their faces that they're like, oh, I believe. It's a bit unfair that the dad didn't get to stick to his guns.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I hate that. It's something that comes up over and over and over again in any movie with skeptics.
Yeah.
To do with the paranormal.
The skeptics have to be proven wrong.
The skeptic gets proven wrong. It happens in the Harry Houdini movie, Death Defying Feats.
Yeah.
Con artist who's trying to trick him into believing into paranormal abilities. And it's all about this love affair that he supposedly had. And the whole thing is fictional.
Mm.
And kind of, while Houdini did have a lot of affairs, is...
Who could blame him?
Absolutely. He's like a movie star, and he like flew aeroplanes. It's incredible. Magic tricks. Yeah.
Oh, you know how I love magic tricks.
Yeah.
Houdini came to my door and was like, hey, baby, watch me make this chalk right on this blackboard. I'd be like, take me.
Take me now.
See you, Michael. It's been great being married to you, but I'm Houdini's girl now.
Do you agree with Harry Houdini's fictional statement that while he didn't think they were real, he didn't see any evil or malice in what they were doing?
Well, I don't think there was any malice to begin with, and I think it's just sort of something that ran away from them. Originally, it was supposed to be something that was just for them, just to show their parents, and you know, little did they know that some nut from the Theosophical Society was going to just take it and run with it.
So, what's the postscript then to your own story of fairies? And that you're needlessly slaughtering one in the caves all those years ago.
After I'd killed a fairy, I woke up in the morning I wrote them a letter and I apologizing, and I woke up to a letter that was written on the back of a stamp, and it was typed. It was from Gwyneth, the Queen of Fairies. She said her name was Gwyneth. She is Welsh. So yesterday, in preparation for today, I called my dad and I said, can you please tell me what you remember of what happened with that. And this just goes to show how crazy my dad is. He said what he did was he found the biggest stamp that he could, which still wasn't that big, and he soaked it off an envelope and dried it out, and then he got a camera lens, a zoom lens, to use as a magnifying glass, and got the finest tip pen that he could find, and then wrote this letter by drawing tiny, 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 tiny dots. So I've always thought that it was typed on a computer, but he did it by hand.
Wow.
With a tiny, which it kind of made me choke up a little bit at the time, because I was like, wow, Dad must have really loved me to do that. You know, he said it took him hours to do this thing. And because my dad is a crazy person, he has all the letters that I wrote to the fairies over the years. So the one that I wrote them after the fateful event at Buchan Caves, me saying, I'm really, really sorry. I got carried away. I'm so sorry. I don't know how to say how sorry I am. And there's letters there saying, I noticed that you took my tooth. You took the liberty of taking my tooth, I said. This event, evidently very precocious. I said, you took the liberty of removing my tooth, but did not leave the money. Please make sure you leave the money soon. I love having you.
Sounds like a letter from a lawyer.
I know.
Well, thank you very much for being on Scammapalooza.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Where can we find out about all your various podcasts? What's the best bet? Twitter?
At It's a Duck Blur is the DuckTales podcast. At Fava Bean Pod is the Fava Beans and a Nice Chianti podcast. And the Pop Quiz Hotshot Twitter, I don't know off the top of my head, but you'll find it if you go to one of the other ones or sort of follow the trail.
Like glitter down the garden path.
Absolutely. And look out for the episodes with Nicholas J. Johnson, because they are some of our best.
Ah, that's all I wanted to hear.
I know.
As always, you can find out more at conman.com.au. This has been Scammapalooza.